Okay, so some of you guys are...
I appreciate you guys sticking out and coming back. That's awesome, right? Shoot, real troopers. I know the last class was maybe a little bit hairy, trying to get everybody on the same page. This class, what we're going to do is composition is something that's near and dear to my heart. That's what I do. It's how I make a living. It's what I love to do. And there's a creative process involved that I think is rewarding, and I think it's, it's just very fulfilling and very satisfying to me. So what we're going to do is talk about, we have a small enough group. I don't have too much preset. What I'd like to do is take this time to figure out where you guys want to come from. And if you're talking about, well, I want to write songs, or maybe you say, well, I play flute and I want to write some songs for me to play on flute, where do I start? Things like that. And we can kind of start meeting your needs and where you are and why you're sitting in this class and to what you want to get out of it. So because of that, I don't want to spend like the whole time talking about how to write a string quartet, and then everyone's like, man, I wanted to write like a heavy metal song, and I didn't even touch, you didn't even touch on that. Like, where was that in that hour I just spent? So to make sure we cover that, I want to get into things that you're interested in as well. But what we just talked about in that last class, we'll play a part in some starting points and some foundations that you can lay for composing and coming up with things. And we just finished kind of talking about triads and common tones and things like that, things of expecting where the note's going to go and kind of listening for leading tones and resolutions and all that stuff, which is great when you're making a solo and when you're just playing around, knowing where the music wants to go and having a sensitivity to that. But when you're talking about composition, you're really talking about three things, in my opinion. One, music is made of the first two things. There's only two things that make up music: melody and rhythm. That's it. Everything else on some level will fall into those two categories. Everything is melody and rhythm. Okay, so that makes up music. We need both those components. So technically, when a drummer does a drum solo, is it music? Like most people would say no, but of course a drummer's going to say yes because he's a drummer. But it's rhythm, which is half of music, but it's a component of music, but I wouldn't necessarily call a big percussion solo music in the full sense of the term. But I think it's a great component, and I was a drummer for a while, big fan. I like the drums, I like making noise. So we have rhythm and music. Now the third part of composition is, it's going to sound like cold, but it's just mainly sort of wasting time. Not wasting time, but buying time or some sort of you filling 4 minutes of time or 8 minutes of time or whatever it is that you want to write, however long your piece wants to be. You're taking music and your rhythm and you're making them last for this long, whatever that is. So when you come to a composition standpoint, you're taking what you know and you're applying it and you're just sort of filling time and you're telling a story and you're making it go somewhere. In the last class we talked about screenplays and movies and how music tells a story and how you can put plot twists in and you can make it go somewhere completely unexpected, or you can make it go somewhere completely expected and have different payoffs in different situations. And so as a composer, when you sit down and you start to think about, okay, how am I going to craft this worship song? How am I going to craft this pop song? How am I going to craft this this piano solo I want to write? Or whatever it is, you need to sort of have a story that you want to tell in mind. Okay? And while you're telling that story, you're just buying time. You're allowing the music to unfold and take us to these places. Okay? That's why everyone loves and makes fun of Yanni. They love him, but they make fun of him too. But That type of music, orchestral, pop, you know, worship music, they all take us somewhere and they do something to us. And you can, those who are sensitive to it can be affected by what's going on. Now, if you listen to, just in the way of background, if you listen to some what they call 20th century music, some of the atonal serialistic stuff, like Arnold Schoenberg, like Webern, Berg, some of those guys, where it sounds like they just basically threw darts at like a map of the notes and just, oh, I got that one, and then, oh, that one, and just sound. Now, that for me, that was like a 20th century masterpiece, by the way. If that was written down, it would have made me millions. But that's what it sounds like to do. Like, it's like the guy from the Muppets that just hits his head on the piano. And that's what they liked, but they were really into experimenting. For me, it doesn't resonate with me. It doesn't do anything for me. So that's not really a story I want to listen to. Okay? Some other people, if you use the heavy metal thing again, some people, big fans, they're going to listen to that story because that resonates with them. Probably not going to stay and listen to that story because it doesn't resonate with me. Okay? Some people have certain worship songs that completely, they're into it because it resonates with them. It takes them to a place. It tells a story. It maybe tells their story. Okay? Like that song we sang yesterday morning. Or was it last night? The one that Hans Ives did, I guess it was last night. So there's times when the music and the lyrics, or maybe it's just an instrumental, maybe the music, it resonates with you and takes you places. And it's fascinating if you ever get a chance to ask people how they wrote a song, or if you like pop music and you watch like Storytellers on VH1, or you listen to like watch Behind the Music or things like that. I find it fascinating to find how these songs came about and what they were thinking about when you wrote them. If you get a chance to watch Bruce Springsteen, even if you don't really like the guy, I thought he's okay. But if you watch him on Storytellers, he goes through his songs line by line and tells you exactly what he was, from a crafting standpoint, the lyrics and the music. And he explains it line by line exactly what the song's about. And he says an interesting thing. He says, was I thinking about all that when I wrote the song? He said, no. He said, but I felt all of it. Sometimes you write something lyrically or musically, and it expresses at that moment, but then you can look back years later and it has taken on whole new meaning, or it has, you know, sort of connected in a way you've never expected. So how do we get to that place of writing? Where do we start? We have a blank piece of paper. We have a staff. Where do we start and what do we do? So those are some things I want to get into in developing some of your ideas for what you want to write. Now, that process changes with the project that you're working on. So, how many people are interested in, like, because they want to compose worship songs or pop songs? Okay, how many people are into kind of like instrumental? I want to compose a piano solo, or I want to compose a cello solo. Okay, doing both. Okay, a little bit of everything. So, we'll take kind of those two facets. Okay, we'll spend some time on the worship music, or just writing a good song, a songwriting sort of standpoint, and then we'll take the instrumental standpoint. Now, of the people that raise your hand for the songwriting, do you write your own lyrics, or someone else writes the lyrics? Write your own lyrics. Okay. So, writing lyrics would be a whole other workshop, so I'm not really going to touch that. But when you talk about the composition of music that goes with lyrics, there's something called prosody. Okay, and prosody, from a songwriting standpoint, is when the music, if I knew how to spell it, I'd put it on the board, but I that's why I don't write it on there. See? There's a method to my madness. Because then someone would be like, that's not how you spell prosody. And then I'd look like a moron. So I'm not going to write it on the board. You can make up your own spelling. There's something called prosody. And prosody is, in a pop standpoint, prosody is when the music matches the lyric, when the tone or the color of the music matches the lyric. So if you have a lyric that talks about it was a dark and stormy night, and you go, okay, not prosody. Now, could it have a desired effect? Absolutely. That, as silly and goofy as it sounds, it may have a purpose or a place sometime, at some point, whether it be maybe it's you know, some sort of like Dr. Seuss-esque play or musical, and it's just real quirky and funny, and even the scary parts are kind of quirky and funny, well then, absolutely, you can use something like that. But if you have lyrics about a dark and stormy night, or it was like, you know, the 11th hour of my soul or something like that, then you're going to go into a little bit more darker places, right? Things like that. Maybe not that one. That's really dark, place of your soul. But the prosody is going to take you to places that the lyric alone can't take you to. Okay? Lyrics are great. Big fan. But when you put the music behind it, if you're doing your job right as a composer, it's going to take that lyric and it's going to breathe life into it. As a poem or as a lyric, it may stand great by itself. I just finished a song. I work mainly with more other lyricists than writing my own lyrics. I write my own lyrics for therapy, but they usually don't leave the house. But I do work with other lyricists, and they're a lot better than I am, so I'm happy to work with them. But I just finished a song that was, it's sort of like a jazz standard type song. I wasn't raised on jazz. I'm from Wisconsin, so I was raised on like polka and all the German European stuff. So I wasn't really raised on jazz. It's not really in my blood, but I knew enough to kind of fake my way through it, and eventually actually ended up kind of sounding good. And what happens was the lyrics, which is like a song that you would hear at a wedding. Very beautiful lyrics that he wrote. What happens is, and this is from him, not me, but what happens, he says, is that the lyrics stand themselves. They're in a book of poetry he wrote, but then when you put the music behind them, if the music's doing its job right, then that song comes alive, and the lyrics, it's like seeing those lyrics again for the first time. Okay? The same thing, I've done music for films where you watch the scene, and if you've never had a chance to see I wish I could have brought clips for you, but if you've never had a chance to see a film clip without the music, just the sound, it's almost like, wow, it seems weird. And then when you see it with the music, it just feels so complete. I'm biased because I love movie music. It's one of my favorite things ever. So, of course, I think the music makes the film. But there is a powerful thing to that, to the composing, being sensitive to what story you're telling. So, as you look at prosody, as you think about it, and you have lyrics in front of you, whether you wrote them or someone else wrote them, again, your goal being to craft and create music that does that and brings out those different moods. Okay? How do we create those different moods becomes a situation of how well do you know the theory that you're working with? How well do you know your scales and your major and minor chords? You can't really go somewhere if you don't really know how to get there, how to get out of it. Okay, it's again like storytelling or driving. If you're writing a story, you may get your characters to a certain point and you're like, okay, I really don't know how to get them out of the situation that they're in. If you're playing music and all of a sudden you find yourself, how do I get back to the chord I was in before? Okay, you may find yourself, you just wrote yourself into an abyss. Okay, and so because of that, you got to kind of be careful. Now, you may spend time and work your way backwards and figure out how you got there and how you get back to where you want to be, but the more understanding you have of the scales and the tones and the chords, that just has, it's like having the full army of music behind you, and you can pick them out and work with them as you wish. Okay? So, when you're painting or telling stories with music, the chords you choose and the melodies you choose are paramount. I mean, that's really the whole idea of composition. So how you develop that and how you come up with it is a burden that the composer needs to do well. So it kind of begs the question, what makes a good melody? Because if you can't craft a good melody, then you're kind of just dead in the water from right where you started. So think about some of the melodies that you call to mind. When I say, what's a great melody? People think, boom. There's usually something that pops into people's head. Anything that pops in your head when you think, that's a great melody? Anything pop into your head?
Yeah.
What's that?
Oh
yeah, I don't think I know that one. Is it like a guitar solo thing?
Yeah.
So like a classic riff. Maybe it's, you know, like a classic solo, something from maybe it's the song that, man, one summer, 19, whatever, that song was on the radio every day. You can't get the melody out of your head. Whatever it is. Maybe it's a worship song that, oh, my man, Amazing Grace, Happy Birthday. Whatever it is, there's melodies that stick with us and resonate, and you can't get them out of your head. There's melodies when you leave the theater. Oh, my gosh, It's a Small World for some reason. Like, it's ridiculous. So you go on that ride, and you might as well just go home because it's your day is... You can't get anything else in your head. It's full of It's a Small World in every language. So why is that? Now, the guy's a genius. Who'd ever did It's a Small World, because it's catchy and it's simple and you could sing it all day. Amazing Grace, you know, great melody. Happy Birthday. The things that really stick with you that are great melodies. Now, there are things that are not great melodies. And there's plenty of those. Just turn on the radio. Turn on any radio station, even a Christian radio station. Just because they're Christian doesn't mean they're great songs, okay? They might have a great message to them. They may not be crafted in the best way. But a lot of not-so-good melodies out there, a lot of not-so-great chord progressions. So what separates the men from the boys, so to speak? What separates great melodies from not-so-good melodies? Any ideas? One is you. You're the first filter that the song on the radio hears. It goes right in your ear. So how you filter that determines what's a great melody. Now, what you have set up as filters basically depends on your influences. Okay? So if you're influenced heavily by salsa music, and you're like, man, that's my bread and butter. I love salsa music. It's my favorite. And then all of a sudden, more of a rock song comes on with screaming vocals, that might not do much for you. You might think, not a good melody. Okay? Your 12-year-old in the car might be like, awesome, I love this song, turn it up! Okay? And that's because they're filtering it differently, they're influenced differently. So that's why some people will love a certain song and some people will hate it. Okay? My wife and I have that discussion all the time. She says, I hate that song. I say, why do you hate it? She goes, because it just doesn't do anything for me. I think it's stupid. I think it's mundane or whatever she says. And then, you know, I say why I like it. I think it has a great great melody range to it, where it gets up nice and high in the chorus and it does some really great things. So part of it is our own interpretation, our own filters. Okay, now to get past that, there are some fundamental things that make a good melody across the board, no matter whether it's jazz, pop, whatever it is, salsa, if you like salsa. I don't really know any. No matter what, there are some great things to a great melody. Now, back to the songwriting thing, let's talk about the structure of a song. Normally, first thing you hear in a song is a verse. Okay? So you start out with a verse. The verse is, when you're composing a verse, from a chord standpoint, you will more likely hear the chords to a verse sort of be static in a way. And by static, I mean the chords are going to have some common tones, and they're going to kind of be able to just be some sort of like circular motion. For instance, just rocking between like 1 and 4. Right? We're not really going anywhere. We're just hanging out. Okay? And that might be a foundation for your verse. You may have a couple different chords. You may have like the 1. Something like that, where it's 1-6, then to 4, and then to 5. Something like that. Whereas you could just circle that all day. It doesn't really go anywhere. We're not really leading anywhere. It just kind of, it can tumble on and on and on. Those are great chord progressions for verses, because you just need to buy that time and put a nice melody on top. And you're just sort of introducing us. You don't want to bust in the song
It'd be like going into a room and be like, hey, everybody, my name's Jeff. I want you to know that my name's Jeff and I'm here. Now, some verses do that, but the first thing you hear a song is usually sort of kind of, it's going to ease you into it a little bit. Whether it be even just a rock song, it's generally just going to be like muted chords, like dun, 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 dun. Okay? It generally doesn't really bust out right away. When do we bust out?
Chorus.
The chorus, or right? Bridge. So you want to bust out at the chorus. The bridge is a great place we're going to talk about the bridge in a second. Bridges are one of my favorites. Billy Joel wrote some of the best bridges ever. But the chorus is a great chance to bust out in two ways. Melodically, at that point, you can take the melody of your chorus and it should sort of reach a peak. Okay? The register of what you're singing, you should take us to the hook and in the chorus, it should be melodically higher than where the verse was. Doesn't have to be that way, but it creates a nice arc with the verse, and then we get the chorus, and then you wind down for the second verse, and you ramp back up, and it just creates a nice wave, okay? A nice change of pace.
If it's flat, you go to sleep.
Then. Yeah. If it's the same sort of melody, and it's the same three notes the whole time, right in there, and even the melody is the same, you're going to have a hard time. Now, there are songs where you don't have to change the melodic, you don't have to change the harmonic structure. With the chords you use in the verse, can be exact same chords in the chorus. I'll try and think of an example here. So, if you have a song that was like, let's say it just was like a la la la, this is your verse. It's kind of like a da 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 da. Great words, I know. Da da da. And then you're gonna go to pre-chorus, which takes you somewhere else. But then when you go to the real chorus, we'll talk about pre-chorus. You might same chords, maybe up here. Same chords, just some C and F and C and F back and forth. But in the verse, you just kept it down in a nice register. In the chorus, you just kind of let it sail. Okay? And you find some nice notes up there. In chorus, it gives us a sense of urgency. When you put anything, whether it's a cello, whether it's a flute, a bassoon, a piano, a bass guitar, when you put anything in its upper register, including your voice, it gives a sense of urgency to it. And when you sing in your upper voice and you have to kind of reach for it, it gives a certain passion and a certain urgency to what you're saying. And when you're kind of down in your lower register, there's more of a soothingness to it, okay? So it's a great chance for the verse to be down low and then the chorus to be sailing away. Okay.
So now, you were just playing 1 and 4 there?
Yeah. Okay. Just rocking back. Now, for you, because I know we had this conversation, I use what's called a passing chord between the 1 and the 4. I had the 1, and then, so a C chord, and then I put C over E to get to pass my way between the C and the F. So I use that inversion like we were talking about in the last class. So C, C over E, F. Okay, so it's C and F, but I use a passing chord, which is that inversion of the C chord. Is that all right? All right. So, Now, we've kind of discussed the verse and discussed the chorus. When you're composing the pre-chorus, are we okay on verse and chorus so far? Okay, chords don't really have to. A lot of people actually, just talk about the verse for a second more. A lot of people think the verse of a song, this is exciting because it's turning into like a songwriting class, which I'm a big fan of. A lot of people think the verse, and you'll hear it if you watch American Idol or anything, if you listen to any pop radio, you'll know that the verse of the chorus is basically, a lot of times, it's just like treated like garbage. You just throw it away. No one cares. The only thing anyone's going to remember is the chorus. So you spend about 5 seconds on the verse, and you get right to the chorus, and that's where you spend all your time. And that's sad to me, because you've just wasted some great lyrics. And you wasted some great time in your storytelling just because you think no one's going to remember it anyways, so I'm going to move on. Well, you've just guaranteed
no one is going to remember it if you, that's the way you approach a song. So guaranteed you're not going to remember it. So you can keep it simple. Just because something is simple doesn't mean it's not memorable. You can keep it simple. Just make sure it has purpose to it. Don't just fluff it up with a lot of cliches vocally and a lot of cliches lyrically. Try to put some design into it. Make sure you're making the notes go where you want it to go. Make sure it's telling the story you want to tell. And if it's not, take some time to revise it. Come up with a different chord. Come up with a different lyric. Because the reality is, if I hear a song and the verse is, I turn the radio and the verse comes on, I'm like, I don't want to listen. I'm already tuned out. A lot of people wait for the chorus, but for me, it doesn't really do it. I need a whole song. I don't want to buy someone's album and be like, I like 30 seconds of that song, and I like 40 seconds of that song. I want a good song all around. Now, I'm guilty of the same thing. I mean, everything I write isn't golden. I mean, there's things that I'm like, well, I should probably be better, you know? And so I work on it and sit and work on it. Sometimes I can't get any better, and sometimes I can, but you never want to have the attitude of no one's going to listen to it, no one's going to remember it anyway, so I'm just going to throw it away, okay? Always be trying to figure out how to make that the best it can possibly be and to tell the story that you want to tell. So we get to the verse and we get to the pre-chorus, which a lot of times will happen between a verse and a chorus, is what's called a pre-chorus. Okay. Now the pre-chorus it's usually not very long. It's a line or maybe two lines, and it's maybe a chord or two chords, but it's something that just kind of, it's a little bit of a water slide to get us from the verse into the big adult pool of chorus land. Okay, you go from the kiddie pool right into the big adult pool. Okay, so that pre-chorus has some sort of something different melodically and something different musically that'll drive us into the chorus. Okay, so if I'm back to my example, that's my verse, right? Da, 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 da. So that's my verse. And da, 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 da. I want to go to the pre-chorus. Now remember, my chorus, if I need to know where I'm going, because I got to bridge these two things. I got to bridge my chorus and my verse. I've got to build that bridge. I can't build a bridge if I don't really know where I'm going. So I have to have an idea of where I'm going. So my pre-chorus can set that up. If I have a pre-chorus that goes somewhere way different, it's going to sound crazy when I get to the chorus. So, da 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 da. Then my pre-chorus, I may want to go da 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 da. Then you go to the chorus. Whatever it is I did the chorus, right? So I went to just another chord, very simple. All my chords are in this key of C. I'm not doing any borrowing. I'm not getting complicated. I'm not getting fuzzy with any sort of scales or anything transitionally difficult. I'm just keeping in basic those scales I had on the board from the last class. I went to an A minor or a sixth chord, and then I worked my way up. I knew I have to, my register of my melody is low in the verse, and I got to get it up to my chorus register, so I gotta start building that bridge, and that's where I went to the da 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 da. Three notes. Bum bum bum
bum bum. You just did your A minor.
A minor to G to F, so like a 6-5-4. Da 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 da. Now, not only ending on the four chord, we know we have to go somewhere, and it's going to have a sense of anticipation. Da, da, da. And building up to that note, da, 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 da. That's the exact same note I'm going to start the chorus on. Da, 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 da. And because of that, I've already kind of built up this tension or this expectancy. And now I gotta deliver. Well, that's where the orchestra comes in and everything, right?
For the pre-chorus, uh-huh. or you don't want to build up too much during that time. I've noticed that some groups will do that, and it kind of just loses flavor when they go into to the chorus. You know, you can take away from the chorus. But.
Yeah, I guess it depends. Sometimes we think of choruses as like big, that's where you blow out the song. And that's generally the truth. There are choruses that you get to the chorus and it's actually pretty mellow. And so it depends where you're going. You don't want to build up your pre-chorus just to lead into a really kind of more subdued chorus. You know what I mean? But if your chorus is like exponentially rocking out more than your verse, then you're going to want to build that transition because it also sounds funny. Nirvana, actually, I don't know why that came to mind, but they're the ones that really started. They, it was just jump, like their verse, choir, and then smash out chorus, and then back to verse. And there really wasn't a transition. They're not really building bridges. It's like what they call terrace dynamics. Boop, boom, boom, boom. And it was just, there's no flow to it. I mean, it sold millions of records because, you know, everyone's wearing flannel and kids are chopping down trees. But when you craft a song, there's plenty of options, and when you get a flavor for the rules, like we talked about in the last class, there's plenty of time to break the rules as well. So we talked about just crafting the melody, and we're going to get to the bridge in a second, but we talked about crafting the melody of the verse into the pre-chorus and the chorus, and we've kind of created this arc of our story. We've kind of laid down here melodically, and we've built up, and then we've arrived at this chorus point, and things just start to sail, and everyone just starts to swoon, right? So, well, not with that song, but with whatever you're writing, I'm sure. So the issue of melody, I think we've kind of touched on, but the issue of what chord choices do you use, again, how did I know, why did I go to the A minor, to the G? It depends. A lot of people, this is where discussion comes in, what comes first, the melody or the progression or the words and things like that. And everyone has different versions of what works for them, and it really comes down to what works for you. If you are in that song, da, 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 and you're in this verse land where you're just living with that kind of melody. Da, da, da. And then, if you're a melodically driven person, then you want to think, okay, I've gotten that far. Da, 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 da. And you think, what's the next thing I want to hear? What's the next note do I want to sing? And then you find that note, and then you find a chord that goes with it. That's melody first, and then you harmonize the melody, okay? And some people, that's the way they operate, and that really works for them. The other option is progression first, or chords first, and then you put the melody on top of it. So after I've done this, think, what chord, what sound do I want to create next? And then I'll find a melody that goes with it. I'm not worried about that, but I want to figure out, what sound do I want to create next? And then, do I want to go there? Do I want to go there? Where do I want to go, and how do I want to create that? And you get a vision or a little bit of an ear for what you want to hear next, and then you try to make it happen. Once you have that progression, then some people like, then you pick out the melody that goes in that progression that falls nicely in line. That's chords first, melody second. Then the people who say if it doesn't happen all at the same time, they're not interested. Chris Isaak, who famous songwriter, he says it's too much work. If it doesn't all happen at once, he's not really interested in writing the song right there. And so it has to kind of, for him, it all has to happen all at the same time. It all has to be coming together like the song wants to be written. So I go back and forth. Sometimes I'm a chord-driven person. Sometimes I'm a melodically driven person. When I write instrumentals, I'm definitely a melodically driven person because I don't know why. It's just different, I guess, for me. But when I'm writing stuff for a project, whether it be orchestral or a small ensemble, I'm definitely thinking more thematic, having a theme and then coming up with something that complements that theme. So last thing about the song, from a composition standpoint, you get to the verse, pre-chorus, chorus, bridge. When you're writing a bridge melodically and harmonically, it should go somewhere completely different. Billy Joel once said that the bridge, which I think Billy Joel's written some amazing bridges, but the bridge is what happens. Usually it's verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, and repeat the chorus again, okay? It happens towards the end of a song, the end of a worship song. For instance, like if in Amazing Love, You're My King, you have that... So you have that, it's your verse. And I'm accepted. And then you have your chorus. Amazing love, registry higher, how can it be, right? And then the bridge. Yeah, you are my king. Okay? So it happens verse, chorus, bridge, and back into the chorus. Okay? Now, from a bridge standpoint, that I wouldn't consider like one of the best bridges ever. I think it's a great part of the song, and I love worshiping to that song. I think it fits exactly what they needed to do. But if you're, most of the time, bridges are going to take you someplace we haven't been before. Billy Joel, what I was going to say is Billy Joel once said that if your song is like a buffet and you're like, the verse, you're like, pasta, I like pasta. You go get some pasta, and then the chorus is like, a little bit of pasta, and then I add some other stuff to it, a different kind of sauce, but it's still kind of the same. It's in the same tonal range, it's in the same sort of scales and chords, but then he's like, the bridge is like, that's like scampier, I want to try some fish, or I want to do something different, and then you come back for some more pasta. So the bridge should take us somewhere completely different. It doesn't have to, again, it can stay in the same thing, but a bridge is a great chance to see, some people I've worked with call it the what else do you got section. We've heard your verse, we've heard your chorus, we know you can play a one chord, a four chord, a five chord. What else can you do? What else can you show me? It's a great time to just stretch your legs and do something completely different. Okay? Melodically, you can do anything. You can go back down into a register where the verse was. You can stay up where the chorus was. You can go even higher, somewhere in the middle. Harmonically, this is a great chance to start borrowing from different scales that are closely related, like what we talked about in the last class. So if you're in the key of C, and we have that chorus, you may start borrowing from closely related keys like F or B flat or G, things like that. And it's going to bring different colors, and all of a sudden, it's that after just when we've gotten comfortable with the song, after about 2 minutes of you doing verse, chorus, we've kind of gotten comfortable, it'll pick us right back up and put us right back down again. So, to stick with that same example, that's our chorus, right? And then if I finished out my chorus, and then maybe my bridge is, something like that, where I go to some different chords, B flat and E flat. We haven't heard those yet, and we're not going to hear them again, but it's like all of a sudden a kind of a bright ray of sunshine, something different and uplifting, and then it brings us back down. So it's a little bit different situation, and then usually we end up going back into the chorus. Okay, it's kind of a structure and an approach to the song. Again, all with prosody in mind, so you want to keep in mind what lyrics you're working with, what's the vision, what's the story that you want to tell with this song. And so any questions on from that songwriting standpoint? Thank you, sir. Any questions on what we just did? Or what? Anything that you want to talk about or learn about from anything I can clarify, help you out with? Anything in your own personal thing you're doing? You're like, I'm writing this polka, and I don't know what to do after I go to this chord. Anything? Okay.
I'm lost as far as the bridge. What is it?
Okay, so if you are in the key of C, this is a great... Does everyone understand the circle of fifths? Has anyone ever heard that before? Okay, if you don't know it, this is a great thing to know. And we didn't have time to get this into the last class, but it's a great thing to know so you can see how everybody's related. Okay, circle of fifths goes like this. Basically, we start with the key of C, which is no sharp, no flat. No sharps. I have to talk into this thing. No sharps, no flats for the key signature. Okay? And then we can work our way around by going up what they call a fifth. Now, you don't really need to know what that means. What you need to know is, as I draw this out, the keys or the scales that are close to each other or within a step or two away from each other, those are the ones that are closer related. And those are keys or scales that you can go in and borrow chords from that won't be such a jolt in the key that you're in. So if we go this way, we can go C to G, which is up a fifth, G to D, which is up a fifth, D to A, which is up a fifth, A to E, E to B, B to F sharp. Okay, and then if you were to go this way, I should have made this a bigger circle. You go down if it would be F, B flat, E flat, on, on. Okay? Eventually they cross paths and they overlap a little bit. But if you notice that I'm in the key of C, I have a nice range here I can borrow from. A step or two away is generally okay to borrow from. Okay? If you're in the key of G, you can borrow some chords from D. Okay? Or borrow some chords from C. What that sounds like and how that works is, if you're in the key of C and you want to make more of a deal of going to the F chord in C. So you have one chord and a four chord. Okay? So you really want to make F a big deal. You want to drive that home. In the key of C, it's not really too much of a big deal because they're pretty, C to F, it's kind of a nice rocking back and forth. So there's not really much drive or pull into it. But if you go to the key of F, you say, okay, let's say the chord I want to go to, or my destination chord, pretend that's your key. How would you get to that chord in that key? So if you're in the key of F, how would you get, what are some ways you can get to an F chord? Well, you would want to know that the 4 chord likes to go to 1. 5-7 chord loves to go to 1. So what that means is, if you're in the key of F, if you know your F major scale, 1, 2, 3, 4, a B flat chord loves to go to 1, and also a C7 chord loves to go to 1. So if you're in the key of C, now you have some choices to make more of that F chord. Okay, that was a 5-7 to 1. And adding that B flat, because a C7 chord sounds like this. C, E, G, B flat. Those are the notes. We borrow that B flat from the F major scale. And it brings us into an F situation, where we feel like F is now, we've driven to F. Okay, and that happens like in Amazing Grace. So we get kind of those sense of borrowing from a closer key to bring them to that key. Now, if you can borrow from B flat, if you know, you want to know your chords in your B flat major scale, those chords, and you could say, well, I have my melody on C. If this is going to lose you for a second, this loses some people, I apologize, but if you're on a C chord, C, E, and G, and if we go to the key of B flat, I know there's a chord of B flat that has E flat, G, and B flat. That's the 4 chord. So I have a common tone here, which is kind of like what we talked about last class. So I'm going to use that common tone to my advantage and make my melody land on that tone. Da, da. So what I've done is I've made my melody the same. I've made my melody a G, and then I've built another chord around it that I've borrowed from a closely related key. It would sound goofy if I did this. See? Now I'm just like, you're just, where are you going? What are you doing? Just kind of random chords. So you need a thread that kind of ties everything together. And melodically, you can do that if you have a melody note that stays on a common tone, which is like what we did with the Jesus Loves Me in the last class. So again, if my melody on C chord, da, 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 now I'm singing a G, I'm going to stay on the G, but I'm going to shift the way I package that, the melody note. Da, 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 and I've moved to the E flat, which is not in C, because C is no sharps, no flats, but I've borrowed it from here. So it's not, it's a shock, but it's not too big of a shock. We can live with it. We just want to know what's going to come next, because if I don't deliver next, then it's going to really seem out of place. So, da, 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 da. So, then I went down to an F chord, because my melody went from G to F, and then F back down to E, and it started me back over here. Okay? Now, if that gets away from some of you, what you can take away from that is knowing, again, the common tones. If you have something that is a common tone, and you're stuck, you have this melody, you're like, what do I do? Oh, it's killing me. What can I do with that melody? And you don't know what to do. And you're kind of like, I could do that. Everyone does that. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Look at the notes that are in that melody and listen to how they interact with other chords. Right? Now, I just took the melody and just wrapped it in some different chords and presented it in a different way, because the chords had some common tones, or the notes in the melody, sorry, had some common tones with the chords I was using.
Are you just probably, I'm guessing, you're just contemporizing the chords, like putting a 9 or a 7?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I started the melody on a major 7th to give it kind of that jazzy sound. And then I went to kind of a, I knew I was going to land on A minor, so I borrowed from the key of A minor, I borrowed from its neighbor, and I brought in another chord to help me pull into that. Now, some of this gets confusing because we haven't all kind of had the background that's going to give us the fundamental to understand borrowing and chords, and we all don't know our major and minor scales, maybe, or all our major and minor keys. But if you can hear what's going on and where the music wants to go, then you can wrap it up in some different ways and present it. And that's where the beauty of composition comes in, where you can sit there and go, okay, I have a great melody. I just need to figure out what to do with it. How do I develop it? Where do I go with it? And you'll see, if you listen to classic music, if you listen to like some of Beethoven's symphonies or Mozart or Bach, Bach was a guy's a genius, man. I love that guy. I never met him, actually, but I think he's really great.
I hope he had.
He was slightly before my time. I was just losing my hair when he started losing his health. But the idea is, if you listen to some of those pieces, you don't even have to read music, you don't have to follow the score, you can just listen and hear how melody is being treated and how it's being developed. In an opening, he may open up, he being anybody, may open up with a statement of a theme, and then later on in that same song, you may hear that exact same melody come back with completely different chords, and it sounds like something totally fresh and totally new. And what all he did was keep his theme and wrap it up in a different way and give it to you to further the story. It's kind of like if you were to see the same character in a movie. If he always had the same clothes on, you might be like, something's going on, because it's been like a week in the movie and he's still wearing the same clothes.
It's like re-gifting.
Yeah, it's like white elephant. So you want to kind of keep things fresh and new. Now, melodically, you can go a lot of different places, and you can have a lot of melodies going on at once. So if you sing harmonies, or if you're creating a harmony, or if you want to compose what they call a counterpoint, which is another melody that goes along with your melody, that's great. But remember, just like the melody that you wrote has tendencies, it wants to go somewhere. When I created that, right? Back, it's very simple. When I do the da 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 the second time, that da da da. Great. Now this time, da da da. I'm not really content to stay there anymore, so I want to go somewhere else. Da 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 da. So I just add a little tail onto it because I don't really feel like telling you the exact same thing twice. It's okay. It's fine, but for that situation, I wanted to make it a little different. And then, with different words, I'm fine singing the same thing again. Da da da, da 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 da. Now, if I put a harmony on that, I gotta remember that I can't just pick random notes. It's gonna wanna kinda keep the same line as the melody, and it's gonna have the same tendencies. It's gonna wanna go different places. So instead of the da da da, I might have like a right, but might have the same if we're singing like that. And if that were the case, you're following the melodic tendencies of those notes. You're following them in the same pattern as harmony. Some people just think harmony, I just gotta sing a note and then another note, another note. You gotta craft a line all the way through, okay? And you gotta treat it carefully. Otherwise, it sounds like note, 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 note. And you gotta make it all come together. If you want examples of how that's done, again, go listen to what Bach does on a fugue or something like that, where he's got like four or five different versions of a melody happening at once, and they're all interweaving, and it just sounds masterful. Yeah, all that stuff. It's unbelievable. And he takes it and he develops it. Now, songwriters can sometimes get into a development quandary. The most probably is like, what do I do with the bridge? I don't know how to develop that section. When we're writing about instrumentals, okay, if you're writing a piano solo, or if you're writing a flute solo, or a French horn solo, or if you're arranging for something, you may find yourself going, man, I have this great, like, four bars of this piano solo, and I love it, I just don't know what to do next. Anybody ever have that feeling? Okay. Guitar solo, whatever it is, you may be like, great idea, I just don't know what to do, I don't know where to take it, I don't know where it wants to go. And that's a legitimate situation, it's a legitimate problem to have. So don't feel like, oh, I have that problem, I must not be a very gifted composer or whatever. Not the case, okay? I'm sure Stephen King, when he writes books, he probably has exactly the same situations. Max Lucado, Robbie Zacharias, I'm sure they all sit down and go, I gotta take a walk, I really don't know what to say next. It happens, and I'm sure Beethoven was sitting there going, I don't know what I hear next. Mainly because he was deaf. Thank you. All right. Yeah.
We were talking about last class, that 4 over 5. Mm-hmm. Is they talking about basically how you've got the 5 over 7?
Right up here or here?
Yeah.
Here?
That up right there.
Well, it wouldn't be over. It's just when you have the number up here, it's just an addition to. So you're adding on. You have like a, remember that we have like a root, third, fifth, and then you add on a 7. Okay. Now, if you put that over a 7th, which is called, it would, in this notation, it would be 5-4-2, but it would sound like this, where you have a C chord over a B flat, or a C chord over its 7th, right? Does that make sense? So, and that really, you're locked, once you go to that chord, you've locked yourself in, that chord, a 5-4-2, needs to go to what they call 4-6, or, I'll put it this way, C over B flat needs to go to F over A. Now I'll show you what that sounds like. Okay, you've locked yourself in with two leading tones. One leading tone from the B flat, resolving down to the A. Hear that? Pulls down. Even in this situation, it's going to pull down to an A. So it's going to act no differently down here in the lower register. It's going to pull down, okay? And the other leading tone you have is in the C chord. You have an E that's pulling up to an F, which is your leading tone of the whole scale. Okay, so you hear those pulling in opposite directions. So again, that's a great example of when you're writing music, you're writing a song, you're composing something, and you go, I love that. That chord completes what I wanted to do there. Love it. But you got to be sensitive to what you've just done. You can't just walk away and leave it. You need to tell the rest of the story. The end. Okay? And even the end isn't the end, because now you have a whole, once you've resolved it there, this chord has tendencies of its own. It needs to go somewhere. It wants to go to a four chord, to a B flat chord. The A wants to go up, back up to B flat, only with a different chord on top. Okay? So because of that, everything has tendencies of your bass line, your melody, okay? Once you key into, and again, just like we talked about in the last class, once you key into tones, and it's just like painting, colors, you can melt them together, and they are going to look a certain way. Once you start mixing and matching tones, you're going to get a certain result. And then you need to sort of kind of get yourself out of that, and you can get back into it. And once you've kind of played around enough where you can get in and out of those things and those desired effects, then you have a great foundation for on guitar, on piano, or singing. You have a great foundation for just kind of improvising and making up solos and making up different things that you want to write. Does that make sense so far? Okay. How else can I help you if I haven't completely messed you up already? How else can I help what you want to do, whether it be from a musical standpoint, composition standpoint, inspiration standpoint, writer's block?
You mentioned the minor scale. What is that exactly? I know the minor scale.
Yeah, so the minor scale. Okay, there's actually three minor scales. I know. I don't know. Who thinks of this? There's three of them. There's what's called the natural minor, the harmonic minor, and the melodic minor. Okay. Now the natural minor is pretty easy, because the natural minor will be the same scale as, let me put it this way. If you're in the key of C, you know, the C major scale, all the white keys. So a natural minor will be taking the sixth note, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, which is A. A natural minor scale will be taking the sixth note of the scale and just going from that note to that note. So that's the natural minor scale. The key of A minor and C major are called relative, the relative major and relative minor, because they share the exact same key signature. Okay? And the reason we get there is, again, taking the sixth note, keeping the same key signature, and going up to A and back down to A. If you're in the key of G, anybody know the sixth scale, the sixth note in the key of G?
C, E.
E, right? E.
It's always the sixth for the minor.
Always the sixth for the minor. So the key of G has one sharp, so I'm going to play E to E with one sharp. E, F sharp, G. Okay, and that's a natural minor scale. Not actually used very often. Here's why. It's because there's no pull. If you're in A minor and you don't use any sharps or flats, you end up with a minor one chord. And you also end up with a minor four chord, which is great. But you also end up with a minor five chord, which doesn't have any pull anywhere to get you back to A minor, to the one chord. There's no pull. So what they've done is they've created a harmonic minor scale, which includes what they call a raised seventh. Okay? And again, this is a little scale, but it sounds like this. Allowing that raised seventh to be in there, change it from this to this. And now there's a pull, okay, into that. And the melodic minor, never really used, but it raises a sixth and seventh note. Raised, and then flats them on the way down. Okay? really used very much, only used to get you into something and then out of it. But when you take, talking about the natural minor, when you take the sixth of whatever major scale you're dealing with, so if you're in the key of G, you're talking about E minor, if you're in the key of A, you're talking about F sharp minor, take the minor scale and then raise that seventh note up to a half step higher, and then you've just laid the framework for the minor scale that mostly everybody uses. Is that... No? Not feeling that?
You lost me on the seventh.
Okay. So if we're doing A to A, A, B, C, D, E, F, G's a seventh, so we raise it up a half step. So instead of G sharp, and we use a G sharp instead of a G natural in the key of A minor. And that allows us to have the major five chord, which really likes to go back into the one, okay? So a lot of times that minor scale will have that raised seventh in there. And that's why most of the time when you're playing an A minor, 99 times out of 100 in a song that has A minor, you'll find an E major chord in there because of that raised seventh. If you're playing an A minor and there's no E major chord, then it's probably just kind of a groovy little tune that doesn't really have any...
60-70s.
Not really any pull, yeah. A little Simon and Garfunkel type thing, okay? Which the guys are awesome. Were you going to have a question? Now, the verse, when you say it's in A minor, like, is it really in the key of C and it starts on A minor, or it's like really...
Okay, it's in C because it goes A minor, C, and F.
Okay, so we have that sort of feel. That's good. And then when you get to the chorus, you're basically on a G chord, and it goes to where?
It goes G, D, then C.
Okay. All right, so you're kind of mixing and matching keys, which is fine because they're closely related. You go from a key of C to sort of the key of G because that D chord puts us in the key of G. But you want to know what to do on the pre-chorus to get you from one key to another key. All right. We had this conversation with these guys too about the transitions. How do you get from one key to another key between worship songs or however the case is? A couple different ways. One is to find out what the five chord is of the key you're going to. Okay, or what the dominant chord is. So if you're in the if you're going to the key of G, the D chord, G, A, B, C, D, the D chord will provide a good transition. Okay, so if you're in the key of C, if you had A minor, C, F, and then A minor, C, and F. And then if you want one chord to get you to G, I would do D over F sharp and something like this. Now, that may be like, ah, it kind of sounds like a little classical for me. I'm not a big fan of how that sounds. That's fine. But that gets you in there. We're using a D chord to bridge the gap. Okay? If you don't want to do that, then what you can do is start buying some other time. You could go down to like the C chord and introduce the D in the pre-chorus, and then you can introduce the D chord in the pre-chorus, and when the G comes in later, it's not such a big deal. If you want, you can come like in a few minutes, just play it for me, and I'd love to help you out and see what we can do, because it will help seeing what the melody does too. But there's always options to get from one way to the other. Two ways. One is chord substitution, like we talked about in the Jesus Loves Me, the first version, where you're like, okay, I want to go to this key, so I'm going to use a similar chord that's going to help me bridge that gap. And the other way is I'm singing this note, I'm going to wrap it up differently that allows me to pull me into that other key.
Like an F sharp.
Right. So if you're singing, you know, if you're singing, if you're in the key of C, and your melody is in C, and you want to get to G, but you end on a C, so it sounds like this, like, da, 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 da. Now, I just stayed the C, and I kept the C and made it part of another chord, and it launch me into G, and now I'm in G. Happy G major.
So a slash chord.
Right. So, so there's a couple different ways to go into it. Again, back to the common tone idea. It's again, I can't stress this enough because it's amazing for me to understand it. But when you start realizing the relationships between the chords and the scales and the keys, and that takes just noodling around on your guitar, on the piano, just kind of going, okay, those two, what if I keep those two notes and add this note or this note? What if I do this? You know, and just kind of mess around and go, oh, these two chords sound really cool together.
Your ear's a good tool.
Yeah, and then you find out, wow, those two chords sound good together. Where does it really want to go next, or what can I do next? And the more you play and the more you're conscious of that, I bet you the next time you go sing or you go play your guitar or you play piano or the next time you sit down to write something, if you're really thinking about, okay, I'm going to listen to where things want to go and how they're related, I think you'll be surprised by what you start to hear working in like the inner voices of what you're playing and working in the melodies that you're writing. I think you're going to be fascinated by how things start to kind of just grow sort of like organically, like they just kind of start to come out of you because you're aware and you're obeying what they want to do. Okay, songs want to be written, they do, and they love you for writing them, so they want to be written, and when they start to grow and they start to evolve, it becomes a very cool process that if you just kind of become a vessel in a way where for them to be just kind of written down. Now, you're putting your filter on because you're using your ear and you're like, I don't like that, oh, I like that, I don't like that, and you're kind of doing that, but ultimately, you're paying attention, you're crafting the song, you're telling the story that you want to be told or that you want to tell, because I've heard many songs that are really just confusing. It's like, I've heard songs that it reminds me of like going to a fancy restaurant and getting served food on paper plates. And he's like, this does not make sense. Like, how does this add up? It doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense at all. And so make sure that if you want to do that, if you want to have a song that's a fancy restaurant with food on paper plates, awesome. Just make sure that, you know, you have Weird Al's number and that it's meant to be that way. But if it's meant to be, okay, this is a worship song that is meant to be for communion, or it's meant to be, it's meant to just open up, beginning the service, just to say, thank you, God, we love being here, we want to praise you. Then make sure it conveys that, and make sure it sends that message and tells that story to people. Because otherwise, you start sending mixed messages with that prosody idea of what the lyrics say and what the music is saying, and you start composing things that don't really fit. People, they just have a hard time hanging in there. They may not know why, they just may know that it just doesn't resonate with them. So, any other questions that I can answer? Okay. All right, you guys are good to go. I'm going to stop this thing. Thank you so much for hanging in there.